Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is another returning guest. I'm very excited and pleased to welcome back Helene Wecker. Helene, thank you for joining me again.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited. Before we jump into the Star Trek, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, the one thing that your audience will probably know me for, if they know me at all, is that I wrote a book. I'm a writer. I wrote a book called The Golem and the Genie. It came out from HarperCollins in 2013. It's sort of historical fantasy. It takes place in turn of the 20th century in New York City. I'm currently working on the sequel. It's called The Iron Season. It will come out in 2019. unless I'm just doomed to write this book until the end times, which is always a possibility. But that's the current plan, is 2019. So.
Well, I didn't even know what the name of the sequel was, so I'm excited to now know the name. I tell people about your book all the time. People who are listening and who have not read your book should stop listening right now. Go to either
no,
your favorite
don't stop
local
listening.
No, I want them to stop listening. They can come back. They'll come back.
Okay.
Either go to your favorite book retailer of choice, physical or online, and buy yourself a copy and read it, because it is fantastic. Hopefully everyone who has paused it and went out and bought your book has come back, and now they can hear us talk about Star Trek. But before we jump into it, we're talking about an episode. I'm going to try and turn over a new leaf in this episode of Random Trek, because usually I try and pretend the listeners, it's a surprise what episode we're going to talk about. But they know, because the title of this podcast is the episode we're going to talk about.
Ah.
So we're talking about Voyager Season 6, Episode 4, Tinker, Tenor, Doctor, Spy, which I believe, and I didn't actually check this, but on the incomparable Star Trek episode draft, I believe someone picked this. So,
really?
As one of their favorite Star Trek episodes. Uh-huh. Basically, this episode is The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, except that it's the Doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he is the kind of the crux of this episode is the Doctor has decided that he wants to daydream, so he writes a little subroutine so he can start daydreaming. And he starts having these daydreams and hilarity and unintended consequences ensue. But it's also a little deeper, though, because he wants to – his constant struggle, which makes him interesting, is that he's sentient and he wants people to treat him as a sentient being, but – and I kind of feel for the Voyager crew, because he is a sentient thing, but he's also a piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it difficult for them to, understand how to relate to him. And there's some interesting moments in this episode that deal with that. Specifically, I'm thinking about when they are trying to troubleshoot his algorithm there. And they decide to, for some reason, project his fantasies in the holodeck so they can all watch them, which seems awful.
It's and Janeway says basically, "Wow, this is really awful," and the rest of them are like, "Well, yeah, but we need to be able to see what he's fantasizing about so that we can get in there and fix the subroutine." And it's like, "Yeah, that's pretty weak."
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good reason. But then immediately, Janeway says, "Oh, this is really bad. We shouldn't do this." And then Harry Kim says, "You should come down to the holodeck and see this." And she's like, "Okay." No hesitation. Let's go see what the Doctor is dreaming. So I did think, as I was watching this, I thought to myself, I would never want anyone to be able to see my fantasies, because we all have these fantasies, obviously, that we keep to ourselves about whatever. They don't have to be anything that's particularly outrageous, but you don't want anyone else to really know about all of your fantasies, because that's just creepy.
It is.
And the Doctor is horrified when he finds out about this as well. But I think that Captain Janeway does a pretty good job of helping him.
She is very, very understanding throughout this entire episode.
Yes.
And you asked before what I thought of – you wanted to know what I thought of Janeway. This was,
Yes.
My first first time in a long time interacting with Janeway, watching her. And I liked her. I think she was probably my favorite part of this episode. She seems, at one point, she, when, and we may be getting ahead of ourselves here,
we
but
can hop around.
Okay, we could. When she's reading the letter of protest from the doctor.
Yes.
And she says, let's see. She doesn't like anyone on the ship to feel unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my initial reaction to that was like, what? Okay, you're like, you are personally responsible for everyone's happiness. Like, that seems like a lot to ask of yourself, especially as you're flying through uncharted territory. And then I thought about it some more and I realized, oh, okay, this is how she's keeping control. This is how she's keeping everything from falling apart. Is it, you know, maybe this is part of it, is she's trying to walk that line between fulfilling crew people's you know, sort of desires for themselves and think of the larger whole and what the whole needs, which is pretty much explicitly what she says to the doctor later when they're discussing his request, is that I need you, I want to work with you on this, but you also have a duty. It's not just about your potentials, it's about your duty to the whole of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
And so her sort of balance between that, where she's trying to accommodate crew members in as much as she feels she can without jeopardizing the crew as a whole, really did come through, and I liked that about her.
Yes, and that scene, I like that whole interaction. So basically, the doctor sends her this kind of formal letter because he's unhappy about the way he's been treated by some crew members. Because I think, and in many episodes, they show this, like, people leave the sick bay and they forget to turn him off, and so he's just kind of he can't do it. He can't turn himself off in
so
earlier
he's just
seasons.
Sort of hanging out.
So he's just kind of like staring at nothing. Although I think at this point in the season, his arc, he kind of can turn himself on and off when he wants to, so he can do whatever he wants, which is nice. But you know, like, people just make jokes about him, and he takes himself a little, you know, Tom Paris makes this point that he kind of brings it upon himself because he takes himself very seriously, and he is perhaps easy to make fun of, but that doesn't mean one should make fun of him. And he, you know, part of it is he wants respect, but he also wants, he feels like he has more to offer, and he wants mm-hmm. to, he suggests that perhaps they should start an emergency command hologram in case the captain is incapacitated and the entire chain of command has been destroyed. He can take over.
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway, so he sends this letter, and Chakotay is like, or no, I think Tuvok says, oh, you know, if Captain, if you don't want to respond, protocol does allow for either myself or Chakotay to take care of this. So basically saying, this isn't worth your time, we can basically tell the doctor no. And she says, no, I want to handle this myself because he's a crew member and he deserves my attention on this, which I thought was great.
Yep. We should go back and talk about the intro.
Yes.
with Robert Picardo singing La Donna e Mobile.
Yes.
Which he's got a pretty decent voice. Wasn't the best lip sync job, but I was pretty impressed.
And I feel like this is one of those things, like, Robert Picardo likes to sing opera, I assume. And so, of course, the doctor likes to sing opera.
Mm-hmm. And everyone is sort of, he's got the whole crew sitting there, and they're all, it's like, I got the feeling they were sort of like paying attention, but also wincing at the same time. It's like you're watching your friend do something that's faintly embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
But people are just sort of like humoring him.
It's like, when you, I would invite you to my one man show, and you'd be like, okay, I guess I have to go.
Scott's a nice guy. We should go to the show.
Exactly.
We'll go out for a drink first. It'll be fine.
Exactly. That is kind of the scene they set up.
Yep.
But no, he wants to sing opera for them.
Mm-hmm. And then Tuvok starts freaking out, and because he's going into Ponfar, and we find this out by the alteration of the lyrics of La Donna e Mobile, which was
yeah.
pretty cute.
I laughed out loud when the doctor sang Tuvok, I understand you are a Vulcan man.
And you have gone without for 7 years about, which is the probably the closest Trek will ever come to saying you haven't been getting any lately.
It is true. Although I will say, poor Tuvok.
Yeah.
You have not seen many episodes of Voyager, but he's one of these kind of, I feel like they do this to like Worf and Tuvok, kind of a very dignified person who takes themselves very seriously. And then they put them in these kind of ridiculous situations that are beneath him. So I believe that, well, we find out, spoiler, the Doctor is daydreaming. But Tuvok has to be sedated, and the Doctor says that they have to specifically inject it into his behind for some reason.
Yes, specifically. There's a lot of behinds in this episode. There's a couple of close-ups on behinds that were, it's like someone on the writing staff had a, I don't know, a yearning. But it was, and there was something weird about the blocking where it looks for a moment like Tuvok is just sort of standing there ready to get hypoed in the butt. And I was like, that's odd. I don't know.
It is weird. The whole thing is like Tuvok is, he's going crazy. And so the Doctor has to sing to the soothing music to tame the savage beast while they look for the hypo spray to hypo spray him in the butt. And then everybody claps.
Yeah, and it starts throwing flowers. All these flowers come down on him. And then I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. Okay.
Yes, which is clever because at this point we don't know that the Doctor is daydreaming. And so you think, well, this is very strange, but maybe, you know, Tuvok has some kind of space virus or something. I don't know. And then the clapping, and you're like, clapping, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Nobody seems all that concerned about Tuvok. And then the flowers, the throwing flowers, you're like, okay, something's going on.
Yeah. And then you see him just sort of like leaning back in his chair in the sick bay. And he's letting his mind wander.
Yes. And that's when B'Elanna says to him, you should just turn yourself off and save us the resources if you're just going to be daydreaming. Which I thought was kind of rude.
Yeah, totally rude.
But B'Elanna's kind of rude, so.
Yeah. I had forgotten how awesome her hair is. She has perfect hair. Like that gorgeous corkscrew. I want hair like that.
And she's a good character.
So I was admiring. I was admiring her hair for most of the episode.
Well, there you go. She does have poor taste in men because she does, spoiler alert, marry Tom Paris. But, you know, whatever. Who am I to judge what the heart wants?
I'm going to judge. Why?
I don't know. I guess he's got a kind of a roguish charm, I guess. I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know why
fine.
I'm defending Tom Paris. I don't like
it. Here in my notes, it says, I'm just sort of like scrolling through my notes as we go. Kate Mulgrew without a Russian accent is now very strange to me because I've been watching on and off Orange is the New Black for the last 3 years. And of course, she's on there as Red. And she is fantastic on that show.
She is great.
And I forget sometimes that she isn't actually Russian.
I'm going to share with you my favorite kind of headcanon thing that I have created for myself.
Okay.
I like to think that Orange is the New Black is actually a holodeck program that Captain Janeway is going through on Voyager and playing Red.
Oh my gosh. I never thought of that. That's amazing.
That's my little theory.
She beats herself up quite a bit then, because like some bad stuff goes down for Red in Orange is the New Black.
It's true.
So maybe this is her outlet. She's like taking out her energies on herself or something.
That's right. Well, she's punishing herself because she feels like it's her fault that Voyager is stuck and lost. And so she's doing this. This is my Catholic upbringing coming up, that this is how you should do this. You should punish yourself somewhere where no one else can see you for all of your sins,
this
real
is,
or
this
imagined.
Is, This is her hair shirt. This is her penal colony.
That's right.
In the holodeck is her personal scourge.
Exactly. Yes. But that's just my, maybe that says more about me than it does about anything else.
No, I like that. I like that a lot.
And so this episode has kind of, I guess, two interwoven parts, right? So there's the Doctor and his story and his daydreaming. But then we also have this kind of ship of aliens that's hanging out in this nebula that didn't show up on their scans, but it's there, which they don't really talk about. It's kind of weird.
They look an awful lot like Suntarans, I have to say. I don't know if what race they are. It's like, but they came on, and my husband was watching it with me, and we both went, Suntarans? So, which is, you know, from a classic alien from Doctor Who, but it's like the potato looking head with like the big uniform that sort of slopes up to it. It either it's a gigantic coincidence or maybe there's only just so many alien head shapes you can do, but it was sort of hilarious to that. I think that was my headcanon for this episode, was that it's actually Suntarans who have suddenly gone very, very timid and bureaucratic. And for some reason, they're out here in the Delta Quadrant being space pirates.
Looking for vessels to steal. Mm-hmm. In Star Trek, they are overlookers. Overlookers, apparently, and which are members of the hierarchy.
Uh-huh.
Which I actually like the hierarchy a lot, just because I love the idea of this race of aliens who are super specialized, so much so that even the captain of the vessel cannot make any decisions. They have to enter it on a little thing and put it in a computer and wait for the hierarchy to tell them whether or not they can do it.
I really liked all the colored lights that sort of beeped around. It looked very Willy Wonka, which was mm-hmm. an odd little touch. I also like that one of the guest stars who I think plays the guy who's the captain of the ship, his name is Googie Gress, which is the best name ever.
That is a great name.
Googie Gress.
Googie Gress. I love it. And the overlooker that we get to know the most is named Phlox, which I guess they just reuse that name in Enterprise for some reason.
Did they ever actually call him Phlox in the show? Because I never caught his name on the show. It was only when I went to Memory Alpha that I found that he had an actual name.
Yeah, I don't know if they do in the show, because I feel like it would have stuck out to me, and they didn't say it. So, but correct me if I'm wrong, Internet. I know you will. And so their deal is they're hiding in this nebula that for whatever reason didn't show up on their scans, which we never talk about again, and nobody seems to be bothered by. Mm-hmm. And so Voyager is going to a planet. It doesn't really matter why, but they're going to a planet. They see this nebula. In this nebula lurking is a hierarchy ship. On that ship is unnamed alien or Phlox, we don't know really, who I guess his job is to scan ships, and he's trying to scan Voyager, but he can't penetrate their hull, but he comes up with this idea of using, like, what is it, a molecular type beam or something
long
to get in there.
Long-range tunneling something.
There you go. It doesn't matter. He can beam in and scan very small amounts of space, but then he thinks, oh, I can, you know, hook into one of their, you know, I don't know, audio visual nodes or something and see what's going on. So somehow he figures out a way to basically spy on the Doctor, which is weird because, well, it's not weird. I think it's a clever idea. But when they show the screen that he is seeing, he is not seeing through the Doctor's eyes.
It's not POV. The POV is wrong. That was, yeah. And I don't, it seems like such an easy fix. It seems like it should be so obvious that I can only decide that it was a choice on their part. Like the audience wouldn't understand, which just doesn't feel right. It's like, no, really, we are smarter than that.
Yeah, we would know if you just show, like, you know, Neelix and Janeway talking, we would understand what's going on.
They just didn't have a steady cam that day.
That could be. But so he's like, aha, I've tapped into this Doctor. I'll figure out what's going on this ship. The clever thing is that so the Doctor's having these daydreams. His algorithm is kind of malfunctioning, so he's having daydreams he can't control. And it turns out that the alien is actually watching his daydreams, and when the doctor is actually not daydreaming is when the signal, you know, drops, and mm-hmm. so the alien doesn't know what's going on Voyager. So all he has to go with are these daydreams, but he doesn't know they're daydreams, which is very clever, I think.
Yeah, and it seems like the perfect setup for sort of a rom-com or you know, mm-hmm. misunderstandings in space, very, very Three's Company.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know, just to cut to spoilers, I don't feel like it reaches its full potential, but it was a very, very clever setup.
Yes, I like this episode. Spoiler for people who were wondering what I thought. I thought it was a lot of fun. Star Trek doesn't tend to do a lot of intentionally funny episodes, mm-hmm. I feel like. There are moments of humor, but I feel like they set out to make this kind of a funny episode. And I think they succeeded in particular. It's not like wall-to-wall laughs, but there are certainly moments that are funny.
Mm-hmm.
There are moments that I think... I don't know if they are exactly problematic, but they are close, maybe?
Yeah, there's a few. I have thoughts.
let's talk about them, because what I'm thinking of, and I'm sure you know, the two scenes that I'm thinking about are when he's in the ready room, kind of getting the lowdown of the mission that they're going to do, mm-hmm. and suddenly everybody really, well, not everybody, but all the women in the room really want to be the doctor's special friend. And so he gets basically some flirty sexting messages from Seven of Nine. B'Elanna starts rubbing his leg with her foot. And then Captain Janeway, which I think in the worst one, Captain Janeway rubs, like drapes her hand over him as she's walking by, and then feigns kind of an old Academy injury in her back and puts his hand on her butt.
Yeah. And the look, was it Paris who was like mm-hmm. watching like, ugh, and the doctors look back at him, was actually this great look like, well, what are you going to do? Like, Captain made me
put. She's the captain.
She's the captain. I've got my hand on her butt, but it's, you know, captain's orders. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing that was problematic to me wasn't so much the fact that all the women have a crush on him or sort of like drooling over him because, okay, yeah, we've established this is daydreams. Right. They say daydreams mm-hmm. instead of fantasies because fantasies does have that like sexual implication, yes. But this is very sexual implication. And yeah, okay, fine. Let's like, you know, have like some realistic fantasies. The thing that bugged me was the women fighting each other over him.
Yes.
It sort of got to almost like hair pulling. It felt very like they all turn into Betty and Veronica. They're all like trying to grab him and pull him out of the room so that they can have their way with him wherever they're planning to take him. But and that seemed not as respectful in a weird way. It seemed less respectful that they would be fighting each other than that he would think they might be sexually attracted to him. It sort of infantilized them and it made mm-hmm. him, it sort of gave him the power. It set up a power dynamic that wouldn't have been there just from like all of them sort of looking at him and drooling.
Right. And it's his fantasy. So why can't they all just get along and share the doctor?
Exactly. Exactly. Because I guess Star Trek doesn't want to go there either.
Oh, well. I guess so. That's too much.
Too much. No.
We can suggest that they all want to have sex with him, but they can't all want to have sex with him at the same time.
Because then they might have sex with each other.
Oh, that's right.
Then
who knows where we're going with this.
Yep.
The other thing that I thought was kind of weird... Not weird, because once again, it is a fantasy, is when he is... Well, it was weird because only because I think that... What's-his-face? Harry Kim calls everyone down.
Yeah.
To watch this particular fantasy, which is of the Doctor painting Seven of Nine, and Seven of Nine is not wearing any clothes.
Nope.
And Seven of Nine, as I've said before, because Seven of Nine... who's Jeri Ryan, is a very attractive woman, and mm-hmm. they put her in a super tight uniform, which I also kind of questioned, but she's kind of a super badass character, so it's okay. She's I think she was meant to be kind of just a sexy lady, but she has turned into a sexy lady who was very smart and no nonsense, which is great. But it's weird that Harry Kim, basically, like, Harry Kim and Seven of Nine are there watching the Doctor's fantasies, which is problematic already.
Yep.
And then he calls up to B'Elanna and Janeway and says, "You guys should come down and see this." Why should they come down and see it?
Yeah.
Is my question.
That for me was like the worst part of it was Harry being like, "Oh, everyone come take a look at this." Because the actual scene itself was decently tasteful. It was, you don't really see much of Jeri Ryan except for her shoulders. And the Doctor is very obviously focused on painting her and not, like, he's concentrating. He's got the beret. He's got the palette. Mm-hmm. He's sort of like doing the thing where you measure with your finger to get the proportions. And the line, actually, what I thought was hands down the funniest line of the episode was when Janeway comes in and takes a look and says, "He does the hands very well." Which was, it was so unexpected and very dry. And I was like, it was just a great line. But the thing that I found really funny about this was in a meta sort of way was, I had just watched last week because I listened to a previous episode of Random Trek where you, and I don't remember who was the guest, did The Most Toys, which was Next Generation episode from relatively early in the run. Was that third season?
I think so.
And there's a moment in there, a scene in The Most Toys, where Data has been sort of stolen away, kidnapped by this guy who likes to collect things. And he wants Data to get out of his Starfleet uniform and wear something else. And so, and he's and Data sort of refuses. So this guy like manifests out of the replicator this beaker of solvent and throws it at Data that will, he says, will melt the uniform off him. But all you see is this weird black patch sort of spreading across Data's uniform. You don't see any skin, any Brent Spiner skin at all. And I just found it very funny that I think it was like 10 years that elapsed between these two episodes airing, where it was, we can't show any skin whatsoever on a main character, to, we're just going to show Jeri Ryan and her all together with a very well-placed painting that's obscuring the lady bits. Obviously she was, what I remember was that she was brought on the show in order to sort of raise some eyebrows. But I do have friends who have told me that she really did become one of the best female characters in sci-fi and transcended the reason that she was brought on. So it was a funny moment, and she's giving him this stare, like this "I dare you" sort of stare the whole time. So I wasn't offended by that the way that I was offended by the women fighting over him.
And I wasn't offended by it because it's clear that in this fantasy, Seven of Nine has, of course, is up for it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's the Doctor's fantasy, so of course she is. But and Seven of Nine is there watching this fantasy, which is kind of weird. My problem is Harry Kim calling everybody down.
Yeah. Like,
come on, Harry. Come on.
Yeah.
And also Harry Kim kind of had a crush on Seven of Nine, so then that makes it kind of weird.
well.
It's very problematic. But I do think it was well done, though, so I will give them that. And I liked when, after Janeway says he's really good with the hands, Seven of Nine says, "Well, he's had practice." And then we cut over to a stack of paintings.
All the paintings.
Yes.
Draw me like one of your French girls.
That's right. So that's basically, then the Doctor has a bunch of other fantasies. One of his big fantasies is that he becomes the Borg appear and everybody's incapacitated and he becomes the command hologram. Mm-hmm. And his uniform, he says, computer, activate the command hologram. His uniform changes. And the little pips dramatically materialize on his collar, which I thought was fantastic.
I thought that was really cute. They just sort of go pop, 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 pop.
Because if you're going to be captain, you need the four pips.
Yep, you do.
What's the point
it's
of
the
it?
Law.
He blows up. It is the law. He blows up the Borg sphere with his photonic cannon that doesn't exist. And all the while, you know, it's kind of creepy that his crewmates are watching his fantasies.
Yeah.
But also a creepy alien is watching his fantasies. And the alien's only creepy because he's watching the fantasies. But in his defense, he doesn't know their fantasies. So he's like, we can't attack this. Well, this ship has lots of stuff on it. I know a lot about it. But this thing is captained by this amazing doctor who seems to know everything and who has destroyed a Borg sphere with one shot.
And he's very popular with the ladies, I think. Yes. And he's very attractive to the females, which is
yes.
a very Ferengi way of putting it.
yes. And so basically he decides that he wants the hierarchy to attack this vessel, but then he thinks maybe we shouldn't. He's kind of powerful. And then he realizes because the doctor starts malfunctioning, his subroutine malfunctions, so he starts hopping through all kinds of daydreams. And that's when the alien realizes, hey, this is probably not what is actually happening. But he can't tell his captain that because he's part of the hierarchy. And if you make a mistake in the hierarchy, apparently they fire you immediately. And so he's like, I can't tell this truth. And we already have permission to destroy this vessel.
In the hierarchy's defense, this was a pretty big screw up on his part.
This is a fireable offense,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. It sounds like they're pretty much sticklers about not expending resources they don't have to, and I don't know. I think maybe he went off a little half cocked, but
he did indeed. And then I'm trying to think of I wanted to mention when the doctor realizes this is happening when he tries to eject the warp core.
Oh yeah,
realizes. Oh, maybe this something's going on. That's not
and,
right.
And Majel Barrett gets a couple of really fun lines. That must have been a lot of fun for her. That wasn't like her usual computer lines. Warning, mm-hmm. warp core breach a lot sooner than you think was the one that got me laughing. And warning, last chance to be a hero, Doctor.
Yes, I love that. That scene, that was great. And then the doctor's like, I better do it. Although he does say, this can't be real, mm-hmm. can it?
Yep.
Because he still wants to believe that he can be this hero.
And I have to – the thing that they did a good job of was they made two of these fantasies to be pretty realistic, or, you know, you can imagine this happening where the rest of the crew would be incapacitated and he's mm-hmm. – or like not able to fix a thing because they're carbon-based and he isn't. And he's the only one who can save the day between this, you know, he can't be assimilated into the Borg and he can eject the warp core himself. And his whole thing is there may come a time when I'm the only person who can save everyone. So can you please give me the protocol to do that? And mm-hmm. I think it was pretty, pretty compelling as far as arguments go.
Yeah, he makes a very good argument. It is only mildly undercut by the fact that he cannot tell reality from fantasy during this episode.
Yeah.
But it's not his fault,
exactly.
As we find out later. The alien beam has screwed up the algorithm. And so they're, you know, they basically take it offline, watch all of the doctor's fantasies as they're trying to fix him. But then the alien, realizing what he has seen is not actually the fact of the matter, he forces the doctor into a daydream after they have seemingly fixed it, and he shows up in the daydream and basically says, you got to help me. I need this job, man.
I need this job. Give me a solid.
That's right. And the doctor is like, how do I even know you're real? He doesn't take a whole lot of convincing. He is easily won over.
Mm-hmm.
And then but the alien does give him good way to kind of prove it, because their ships are cloaked. He gives them a way to find their with a scan, And the doctor goes up to the bridge and says, you know, we're going to be attacked by these aliens. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever, doctor. But this is another moment where I appreciate Janeway, because she kind of, you could tell she doesn't really believe him, mm-hmm. but it's not that big a deal mm-hmm. to just scan slightly differently yeah. To make the doctor feel okay. And so they do it. And lo and behold, he's telling the truth. And now he has to pretend to be the captain, because that is the story that the alien has told his captain. Mm-hmm. And this is a good scene where Robert Picardo as the doctor, you know, we've seen his fantasies where he's full of, you know, this braggadocious, kind of cocksure Kirkian certainty. And when he is thrust into the actual situation, he's not as sure as he thought.
He did some pretty good physical comedy with like, he sits, it's like he convinces himself to sit down in the captain's chair and then like accidentally touches something and it beeps and he just shoots out of it. Like his butt's on fire. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty funny. And finally he starts to relax and Janeway, who is coaching him, tells him not to improvise, but he ends up improvising his pants off. And convincing them that he has the photonic cannon, mm-hmm. and that's how the Borg ship was eliminated without a trace, because the hierarchy ship like scanned they scanned the area and they couldn't find any Borg, like any like remnants of the Borg ship. So they're convinced, because it of course never existed. So they're convinced right. that it's just going to vaporize them into nothingness, and so the hierarchy, they ask the hierarchy and right. the hierarchy.
As you do
with everything. I can't mm-hmm. imagine how many messages they must get, like every, I don't know, every minute, how many they're, but.
I hope they have an unlimited texting.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
That's a lot of messaging.
So, yeah, and then the hierarchy suggests retreat. And so they move away at maximum impulse.
And the doctor has saved the day.
Yes.
And, you know, it ends with he's going to, I was going to say 10 forward, but I forget what they call their little place where they hang out. The mess hall. There you go. Or like B'Elanna or somebody says, hey, doctor, come on down. You need to meet me. And so he's like, oh, fine. He walks in and you think for a moment, is he daydreaming again? But he's not, because everybody's in their dress uniform and they're clapping. Everybody's happy. And Captain Janeway gives him a little medal because he's saved the ship with mm-hmm. his creative thinking. And she says, you know, I thought this was a good choice, because she could have said, and since you did such a great job, we're going to make you, you know, part of the command structure. Mm-hmm. She doesn't say that. She says, since you did such a great job, we're going to research making you part of the command structure, which is A, I think the right choice, and B, kind of a mature way to do it, as mm-hmm. opposed to just saying, come on board, Doctor.
Yeah. There was a point earlier in the episode when they were discussing when she was responding to his indignant letter. And she told him that when they got back to the Alpha Quadrant, she would recommend looking into it when they got back to the Alpha Quadrant. And all I could think was, okay, this is season 6 of the show. Is it 6?
Yes.
And they've been out there for, you know, presumably 6 years. Is that like the really polite way of saying, yeah, it's never going to happen? I started to wonder, do they all have like this long list of things they promised each other that they're going to do when they get back to the Alpha Quadrant, that it's like, yeah, never in a million years, but, you know, we can all hope.
Yeah, I thought that was funny, because it's two layers of that, right? It's like, oh, well, we get back to the Alpha Quadrant, which you're like, well, that may never happen.
Yeah.
I'll just forward it to Starfleet Command.
and that'll be on, like, number one priority of all the stuff that we'll be downloading from our, you know, 10 years in the Delta Quadrant, facing all this stuff. And, oh, yeah, here's the doctor who wants to, like, be a captain.
Right. Yeah. So I thought that was funny. But she redeems herself by recognizing, all right, yes, we need you as the medical officer, because, you know, we need someone to be the medical officer, but maybe we've underestimated your abilities and your capacity. So let's look into it. And he's happy. Everybody's happy. Even Seven of Nine, gives him a little kiss.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
She says, that was a platonic gesture. Don't expect me to pose for you.
Which I think is a great way to end the episode. Mm-hmm. And so that's the episode, the Doctor Daydreaming, which kind of sounds like a Doctor Who title. Yeah. The Doctor Daydreams. what did you think? You said I kind of hinted that you didn't think it met the promise of the premise.
Yeah, I feel like they could have, given the setup, they could have done, just off the top of my head, like two different ways. It's like, you can have the madcap comedy, mm-hmm. or you can have the descent into madness. And they went closer to madcap comedy, but it wasn't madcap enough. It's pretty tame. All it is mostly is like him getting medals and having flowers thrown at him, and women, like, you know, throwing themselves at him and trying to hurt each other. And I wanted more, I don't know, more of an idea of this being a fantasy world where anything goes. And so what does that mean? Which I guess would have interfered with the other plot, with Phlox being able, with Phlox seeing into his fantasies, and how he would have realized earlier maybe that oh no, I've gotten the wrong end of the stick on this. This isn't actually happening. This is just the guy's daydreams. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I was expecting, I was actually really surprised when Phlox tunneled in and got into the daydream and introduced himself to the doctor and said, "You got to help me with this." I was totally expecting for them not to realize what was going on until, like, and for Voyager crew to figure out what was going on, that someone was listening in on the doctor's daydreams, and that they had to put a ruse together in order to drive these people away, and that it wouldn't be like working with Phlox. And mm-hmm. because it did seem really flimsy, like, why would they be helping this guy? I guess the only reason they're helping this guy is because the other ship could damage them and you know, possibly kill them. But basically he's saying, yeah, I've been spying on you and we're totally pirates, but hey, like, I want to keep my job, which doesn't seem like the best reason for Voyager to help him. But so I was expecting there to be a little more sort of having to put on that ruse without the other ship's help and make the doctor seem like, you know, a real loose cannon. Instead of this sort of helping and Falderall about going from a type 3 assault to, oh no, a type 4 assault.
No, and not two, a type 4 assault.
And Tuvok's eyebrows would sort of shot up, and I was like, ooh, he's convinced this is a type 4 assault, huh?
That's right. He is totally into it.
Yeah. So, and I'm probably giving it, I'm probably being too picky as always, and I have to remember that it is, TV has conditioned us to expect different things now. And mm-hmm. so part of it is just sort of remembering myself back to the late 90s. But
it was a different time.
It was a different time, and we expected different things. But it was cute. It was very cute. I will just sort of let it rest there.
I thank you for joining me. This was a lot of fun.
I agree. Thank you so much for having me on.